Welcome to Live with Bitcoin, where we delve into the personal transformations through the lens of Bitcoin. I'm your host, Vivian. Thanks for tuning in. Today, we're here for a special episode, for another in-person episode on Live with Bitcoin, sitting down with Katie Ananina. Katie has joined us in the past on Live with Bitcoin, and that was actually one of the starting points where we started delving into the Live with Bitcoin on more of the lens of motherhood, family, femininity, relationship. So it's a great opportunity to finally do this in person and have Katie on Live with Bitcoin part two.
I love it in person. It's just a different vibe.
A lot has changed since we last spoke. Last time we were talking a lot about your business, Plan B Passport, and now the company has been successfully acquired. And now you're also entering into new chapters in your personal life, welcoming baby number three. Is that right?
Yep. Wow. I'm currently expecting number three. Life is definitely looking completely different from when we last recorded the episode. And yet certain things haven't changed, such as Bitcoin being the basis of all of it in some way. It's exciting.
How, with all of these life changes happening within a really short amount of time, how are you feeling truly?
It's been great. Every day I'm just being sure, like gaining more confidence in decisions that I have previously made that got me here today. For example, with the acquisition of the company, right? For a long time, I've considered bringing in a partner, or like I was a solo founder, which means lots of juggling, payroll, processing, operations, marketing, all these things. And I've tried to bring in a partner over the last 8 months before the acquisition. I've talked about a couple of people, and that just never came to fruition. It just wasn't a good fit. And every time I would realize, man, I've wasted some time. And then CitizenX came along. Funny enough, I met Alex, the CEO of CitizenX, at the Bitcoin conference in Nashville last summer. And it was just a breath of fresh air, because finally, somebody in the industry, in the investment migration industry, was seeing the industry through the same lens as me, because he was also a Bitcoiner, and he also wasn't like a 50-year-old dude in suit who's just lawyering things up and cannot absolutely not see the geopolitical trends and the collapse of currencies and the government overreach. Like, it's just not something that lawyers in our investment migration industry consider whatsoever. But for us, like, flag theory, second citizenship, and what we do is truly a security model, and that's how we consider it. Like, you take your sovereignty back through acquiring multiple citizenship, multiple passports. So we chatted at the conference, just like made friends basically, and then many months later we jumped in a call to discuss a certain jurisdiction, and I like randomly mentioned at the end of the call, oh, you guys should just acquire Plan B Passport. And I saw that pause in his eyes, and I was like, wait a second, he didn't laugh at what I said, he actually like
thinking about it.
So we started talking, and because we were so aligned in principles and values, it was a pretty quick negotiation period. It wasn't like 3 years M&A deal and lawyers and bankers and all this BS involved. It was just two businessmen sitting down, discussing the terms, getting to the point where both of us are comfortable with, and executing. My entire team got on board at the CitizenX.
Nice.
It's been really good transition for all of us.
So at the time, you were already thinking about acquisition actively?
I wasn't thinking about acquisition per se. I was thinking about bringing in a partner that would help me run things, that would take things off my plate. Because again, when I started this business, I was a single girl traveling the world, shitposting on Twitter. I got married, had two kids, and now expecting number three. Like, life is getting a lot more than just running a business. So I truly needed help. And of course, with this acquisition, I offloaded lots of my responsibilities, a lot of mental load. And now I get to focus on exactly the things that I'm the best at, which is educating people around the world why they need second citizenship.
Right.
I'm doing marketing for CitizenX now.
That's amazing, because it seems like you throw that idea in the air first, And I think that it just gave me a huge reminder that we don't do this enough. Sometimes we feel like, oh, I need to be 100% ready, or there's an idea that's brewing in my head for too long. And then we're so protective of the idea that we don't like to share, where we feel insecure about something that's unfinished. Mm-hmm. And then we don't share it.
Yeah. And then you get it done and you look back and you think, why didn't I do it earlier? There was nothing that prevented me. Yeah. Taking this step sometimes is like jumping off a cliff. But yeah, sometimes you just got to gain that confidence and get it done and then realize there was nothing scary about it. And you way overthought of how people are going to react, what people are going to think about you. Yeah, that's definitely a trait women hold more than men.
Definitely. I think we talked about this yet last time on the show of women tend to apply for a job when they feel 100% qualified for the job. And since the acquisition, how have your role in the company changed, and what made you decided to stay in the company?
Yeah, so first of all, what I realized was me running the business. The moment I got fully involved in paperwork, and I was always involved in paperwork, every case I was handling personally, I overview the entire case preparation for the submission for the citizenship. And the moment I got like really deep into the weeds of the case, I would stop selling. Like, marketing is just not on your radar. There is like conflict of interest. I'm too busy with cases, so I'm not going to sell more so I don't get more busy with cases. It's like a true conflict of interest between you and you, between two roles that you hold in the company. So me getting fully separated from the processing department, I truly get involved when I really need to be. Sometimes clients specifically ask to talk to me and explain certain things when it comes to Bitcoin or things that they feel connected to me. I, of course, jump on. But just fully separating from the paperwork department, and the acquisition allowed me to do that, gets me focused on marketing. And that's been great.
That's amazing. But at the same time, do you feel like a shift after the acquisition of previously working for yourself, working for your own company, growing your company versus now being in a role and working with more of a team that's not necessarily your company anymore? Like, is there a shift over there somehow?
Definitely a shift. Well, first of all, I have so many more supporting hands now. Like, I don't have to get involved in tech at all. Like, engineering handles itself. I'm not part of the statement of work. So, and I feel like I can fully rely on that. Right. Even if before I had contractors doing some tech work for me, I knew that I could rely on them, but I was still heavily involved and I knew that I must correct mistakes here. I just know that if I have a problem, they will find the best solution way better than I do. And just having this hands supporting me definitely helps. Now, in terms of shift of responsibility, I definitely have this very high level of responsibility, no matter if it's my business or somebody else. So there wasn't a shift there of like, oh, now I can chillax a little bit. No, I didn't experience that yet. Right. I'm sure I'll get to this point because like this time I get to take maternity leave, which I didn't get to take last few times. Wow. And that was truly part of the acquisition conversation. I was like, well, Alex, I will get pregnant again. I will have another baby. And this time I will claim my maternity leave, which I just didn't have a chance to do so last few times. So I get to chillax for my post-labor times.
Wow, that's great. Do you, now that since we last time, it has been like 18 months-ish, how have the trends in acquiring second passports changed since then? Because before, last time we talked about, and you were saying that Turkey was a popular option, and there were a few combinations for like Caribbean passports and for different countries. Do you now see any commonalities of these destinations, and where are your clients based? Like, is there a common choice for people who come from certain area?
Yeah, the trends that I was predicting back then are truly getting to fruition right now. For example, we see a lot of pressure from the EU towards all the countries that have citizenship by investment programs, specifically the Caribbeans. They really don't like how the European citizens get the citizenship of Caribbean countries And that will allow them to avoid any capital control that is currently taking place in the EU. I also predicted that there will be new jurisdictions in Latin America, and El Salvador is currently the best citizenship program out there. Truly, right. I believe that wholeheartedly. And now we're also expecting Argentina launching its citizenship program, which I'm very bullish on. We also saw a little precedent that has yet to fully take place, but Trump card, right? Mm-hmm. So a couple weeks before they announced the Trump card, I tweeted that EB-5 program, which is an investment-based residency program in the U.S., is going to be shut down. I was expecting it for a long time. It's full of fraud, and I knew that once DOGE get to the investment-based immigration program, they will shut it down. So they announced EB-5 to be shut down, the new program to be $5 million, which is exactly what I predicted in my tweet, and it's a direct path to green card, but you can apply for citizenship right away, too, once you have this green card. So they announced it. It is yet to come to fruition. Like, there's a lot of back and forth power dynamics, fighting going on.
Right.
I do want this to happen simply because I want the United States to set the precedent of saying, bring the capital and get a quote, like get the citizenship of the country. This is how you bring your fruits of labor. This is how you contribute to society. You can pick and choose citizenship with your money. I am full pro pay-to-play citizenship. Mm-hmm. I think this is the future. This is how we truly bring in the free market competition to nation states.
Right.
And that's what that's one of the biggest trends that I'm seeing. Like El Salvador truly sells citizenship for Bitcoin. This is like the public companies right now selling issuing shares to buy Bitcoin. The nation states are issuing citizenship to buy Bitcoin. I want this mm-hmm. to become a norm.
Yeah.
I want more jurisdictions to launch these programs with Citizen X. We're now able to get involved with small countries' governments to help them launch these citizenship programs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very excited about that. Now, if you ask me to, what are the trends? Latin America, huge trend. Everybody likes it there. Obviously, El Salvador is kind of leading the way. Argentina does too. A lot of Americans who are unhappy with the current administration, they are all claiming their European citizenship through Ancestry.
Mm.
So we've been doing quite a few of those, like Italy, Poland, you can go 3 generations back. Ireland, Slovakia, you can go 3-4 sometimes. Czech Republic as well. And then Ireland, you can go 2 generations back. So just look into your ancestral ties. See if you have a grandparent that, you know, moved to the U.S. In 30s and you can claim that citizenship. So that's something we're doing as well.
Are you seeing the trend of becoming increasingly difficult to acquire second passports because of the geographical tension and then all of the chaos we see in this world today? Or is becoming easier and easier and cheaper because of these developing countries either embrace Bitcoin or they want to attract capital? What's your take here?
We are in this fourth turning, right? Again, power dynamics switching between the old guard and the new guard. And the old guard is still holding some weight in the world, and they're able to dictate some of the citizenship by investment programs, what they can or cannot do. For example, last time we talked, the citizenship in the Caribbean was still like $130,000, $150,000. Now it's $270,000. And the wow. price increase was dictated by the Caribbean islands and by the European Union. European Court of Justice also shut down Malta program because they said European citizenship is not for sale.
Right.
Well, somehow it's up for free grubs, but not for sale. So, okay, guys. What I'm seeing is I'm a little bearish on the industry of investment migration short term, but I'm extremely bullish long term because the old guard powerful countries are on their last breath. And once the Caribbean islands and other smaller nations recognize that and fully say that, oh, we are not reliant on them anymore, we don't even care, we are willing to launch our citizenship program without being scared of what they have to say,
right.
Their new countries will stop popping up. So I expect a few more jurisdictions in Latin America to launch. Like, my New Year prediction was two more jurisdictions this year in Latin America. One of them has already officially announced it, and I'm hoping there will be one more that announces it by the end of the year. I'm also very bullish on Balkans, which is the Schengen area outside of EU. Some of them has applied to join EU, but that's just never going to happen. And if you look at the citizens' willingness to join EU, it has been going down from those Schengen countries. Like, if you ask Serbia, a vast majority of people do not want to join EU. Right. So that's been interesting to see. Yeah, long-term, definitely very bullish. The free market competition of nation-state is coming. Mm-hmm. But short-term, yeah, we will see some turmoil with this power dynamics.
What is your time frame for short-term and long-term?
I'd say bearish in the next 2 to 4 years. Although there will be some early spring flowers coming into play. Like, El Salvador and Argentina are the early signs of spring for me. Like, they're front running the bull market of citizenship by investment industry. So short term, I see Caribbeans having really hard time, maybe even Turkey having hard time keeping up with their program. Portugal Golden Visa will definitely have hard time, already having hard time. Malta shutting down, that was also not a good thing. But yeah, bullish in Latin America, bullish in Balkans, and they're starting to take their steps forward.
Do you think these countries who are shutting down these programs or taking a step back from this approach, in the long term, would they reopen this approach, or you're banking on more of the new countries so that we don't need these anymore?
They will reopen it, but they won't be the first ones to come back.
Right.
Basically, there will be quite a few countries that are like, well, we're launching, we don't care. Mm-hmm. And then those that shut down under the pressure of European Court of Justice and other European Brussels brains, they'll realize that, like, wait a second, we missed out on so much revenue because of you guys. Right. We're back.
Yeah.
So, like, Montenegro would be one of these countries.
When would you say would be the best time for a family or individual to start thinking about this? At what point in their life, or if you have a prerequisite of, if you hit all of these points, it's time to do this?
Yeah. I mean, it's certain net worth. Like, after 5-7 million net worth, like, no-brainer, you got to have a second citizenship. If we're talking about citizenship through investment. If you live paycheck to paycheck, but somehow you have a grandparent that came from Europe and you can claim that citizenship for nearly free, get that done. Get that done now. Simply because if you're eligible today doesn't mean you're going to be eligible tomorrow. Like, Italy just switched their citizenship law in March out of nowhere. Nobody expected that. So a bunch of people got disqualified, or we have to go through judicial court system now in order to claim that citizenship for them. While previously, all they had to do is submit some paperwork. So if you are eligible for certain jurisdiction passport, apply now. There is no tomorrow. The best time was yesterday. The second best is today. Citizenship through investment. Consider your attack vectors. Consider your threats. But after 5-7 million net worth, must do. Absolutely. Mm. And then, yeah, also consider your line of business, your line of shit posting, and other attack vectors and threats. Yeah. And your home country jurisdiction. That, like, for a Russian citizen, having a second passport is a true necessity, not a luxury by any means, simply because you can't travel anywhere. For an Indian citizen, yes, they have to kind of renounce their home country citizenship and become like a special type of resident. But on an Indian passport, you can't enter anywhere. You can't travel. You can't do anything. So I see a lot of expats from India fully renouncing their Indian citizenship, getting a better one, and just keeping their residency in India. So depending on your home country jurisdiction, that will vary too. Mm-hmm. And then Bitcoiners, like, Bitcoiners just have to do that because they already have the asset that is clearly against the interest of the nation state. So we are the enemy of the state simply because we are hedging against their currency. We're shorting the US dollar. Mm-hmm. So there will be a point where, somewhat similar to 6102, will start taking a certain place, like strategic Bitcoin reserve. They're custodying Bitcoin. At some point, they'll say, look, we're really good at custodying Bitcoin on the state level or on a federal level. How about we custody yours? How about self-custody is outlawed? Like all those things, like you just got to hedge against that.
Right, right. It's better to act sooner than later.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, it's too late when you need it.
Right, right. And do you see outside of the Bitcoin or demographic that's heavy in the business, in the client base, do you see another industry or another few industries that people are actively thinking about this besides Bitcoiners?
Yeah. Basically, any industry that has questioned the mainstream system or approach to their area of expertise will start doing it in other areas. So in COVID, we've seen how medical professionals just realized that, like, wait a second, everything I've learned from my medical school is absolutely of no use, and I'm going to go against the system, and I know that I'm right. Well, after that, all these medical professionals became Bitcoiners because they realized if they were lied to in the medical system, they've probably been lied to in a financial system. So they all also need the second citizenship because they need to hedge against their home country government. So anybody who has questioned authority in any of the industry, in any of their professional expertise, will consider second passport easily. So just this lack of trust is a fundamental need. And funny enough, in the US, they have such a good game running with the election. It's always 51 versus 49. And somehow every 4 years, half the country is unhappy with the results. This show business level of 51 versus 49 blows my mind. They're doing it so well. So every 4 years, there's half a country that is unhappy with the results and they seek a solution. So this cycle, the Democrats were like, well, it's going to be a Nazi Germany. We need to get out. And the 4 years before that, it was all the Republicans who thought, oh, no, the administration is an 85-year-old man who doesn't know where his pants are. We need a hedge. So the political game was also definitely contributing to people's lack of trust to the government. But okay, for me, it's like, no matter who sits in the White House, you need a hedge because it's all them against you, no matter what.
Yeah, and ultimately, it's down to, it's our personal responsibility to hedge for ourselves.
Exactly.
And don't trust and verify, right? And in this case, we're not in the position to change it. So what's in our control is really to protect ourselves the best to our ability. And I bet a lot of your role right now as a CMO at CitizenX involves these type of conversations to educate people about why they may need a second passport. What type of approach do you take there? And what is some general feedback? Do you find storytelling, for example, in that process any helpful?
Yeah, well, my personal story obviously getting me primed. I'm sure you are primed to that too. So I can't necessarily tell people my story and that will like wake them up because they think that I'm just such an off case. This would never happen in their home country, which I'm like, no, if you learn history, it on long enough horizon, all this will happen to every country. And that's just a matter of time. A lot of them are already questioning authority and I don't necessarily need to tell them why they need a second passport. I do need to find a solution that works for them. So when I talk about flag theory, which is my definition of flag theory, limits your dependency on any one particular state, it's a security model. So it has to be custom tailored to the client. And that means understanding their goals, needs, understanding their attack vectors, and finding a solution that truly works for them. That will also, we need to consider their family composition, how many generations, are they willing to relocate, are they willing to visit the country, is it truly a plan B, like in case of emergency, or is it actual, it's going to become plan A most likely, and we have to actually consider the desired lifestyle. So for a lot of my marketing job, a lot of my marketing job is basically to try and build out those solutions and show them how they can get to their goal.
Right. Wow. I see. So there's still a lot of your knowledge base must be like really up to date with every program that's come out in the world and get
Definitely.
Shut down.
Definitely. And that's the beauty of being the business owner previously. Yes, I'm now marketing and doing sales, but because I know every little detail about the entire process, I've done it so many times, that's why I'm good at what I do, because there's no part of the process that I'm unfamiliar with.
Right.
So that makes it special for me, because I can truly spotlight anything along the lines.
Yeah.
And just being in the industry for so long just gives you answers. There's this very, very big piece of subconscious knowledge. Like even if I were to try to share all my knowledge with my assistant or like with a new employee, there's so much of subconscious knowledge that I haven't learned, but it's just accumulated in some ways. And like, I will know the answer just because I have all these little pieces of information and I like come up with this answer that I've never learned or has never been discovered before at all. So subconscious knowledge definitely helps in marketing.
It's so nuanced as well, because I'm so happy for you, because it seems like now you're in a really sweet spot to do what you're good at and what you're best at and where you can generate the most value for the entire business. Because if you're a business owner yourself, there's so much naturally we're not going to be good at every task or enjoy every task. And if you're a business owner and ultimately it falls on your shoulder, right? And even if you don't do it, you have to think about it. You have to be the last gate to catch all of the errors. And that's massive stress.
Yeah. And the 20% of tasks that I absolutely disliked as a business owner take 80% of the mental space. And then you just can't put your efforts on what you're good at, because you have to close those gaps that you absolutely hate.
Right.
And that's just not a good use of time.
And when you know the business inside out and have so much context, oftentimes, like, I'm sure it's the same for all relationships. It's the same for business relationships, the same for marriage, the same for parenting, that oftentimes it's not about what you say, it's about how you say it. And it's extremely delicate in the sales conversation, where every single word or body gesture even can make the other person react totally different based on their mind space, your mind space, and how are you actually communicating?
Absolutely. And like, learning English as a second language, sometimes you think, does that benefit me or is it actually a disadvantage? Because we are way more careful with our words, because we know the direct translation, we know the context, we had to learn that context thing. Sometimes we can be very delicate in phrasing things, like English as a second language person.
Yeah.
While in other times, you just say something because it's the first thing that came to mind, and then you realize that's not exactly what I was trying to say here. That definitely plays a role in relationship. But then the same goes for, like, I mean, as a family, we have chores, right? And at some point I realized that the worst thing that I absolutely hate the most, there are two things: folding the laundry after laundry and unpacking the dishwasher. And I was like,
right, I hate these things too.
The first thing I delegate was folding the laundry. Like, I hired somebody truly and I said, you can miss out on anything else in the house, but never let me fold the laundry. So that was like this one thing that took 80% of my mental capacity in early motherhood, like the first 5 months of mothering. I just, where are all this laundry is coming from? It's a tiny human. So I'm never folding laundry anymore.
Wow. Yeah, it's the power of delegation. And great to see you're in a great spot where you can do what you do best and then because you're good at it and you're focused, then you're happy.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And then you have more time and resources and energy for your family, which, let's shift gears and talk about your new roles and how the recent life changes have shifted you personally, living the life with Bitcoin, the next chapter. So I think let's have a new segment here. Okay, so you've welcomed your second child, and now you're expecting a third child. How was the process of raising the second child different from the first?
So being a second-time mother is a superpower. You know everything. You don't stress about anything. Partially, I think my second child is just so easy. But then I also recognize that it's not only the child. It's also me who is easy. It was just super easy. The birth was... I had a beautiful home birth. That was super simple and easy, quick. My husband kept saying, oh, it was a normal Saturday. I had my morning coffee. Then 2 hours later, she had a baby. Then I had my afternoon coffee. Like, I barely noticed anything. So it was a great Saturday. It was easy. And the first few months, you don't stress. You know exactly what to do. You know all the hints and tips and tricks. Baby sleeps somehow really well. You're not tired. You recover really well postpartum. So yeah, my baby number two, everything is easy. He's now 16 months old. And this, now I'm a little over 12 weeks pregnant, so just out of my first trimester. And I gotta say, that was the hardest first trimester I've ever had. Don't know why. Maybe because, I had two babies back to back, and I'm now number three, so I might be deprived of something. Maybe just my body decided that's how it's going to be this time. But I had to rely a lot on my support system in the last 8 weeks. I just fatigue, energy levels are low, constantly nauseous, lots of hugging with the toilet. Sorry for TMI. It's getting better. So around 12 weeks is when it's when the energy comes back. So
It works out so well then, because otherwise, if you were to be the business owner of your business, like forget about the maternity leave for now, but even this first trimesters would be extremely painful.
It's actually a funny thing. Now I can fully say that every first trimester I consider shutting down my business. Every time in the first trimester I'm like, why do I do that? Why all the stress? I don't need this. I'm done. And then you get to 15 weeks and you love your business. Because I always loved my business. I never hated it. I love what I do a lot. I'm passionate about it. So I would, like, in the second trimester, I would get this lots of creativity, so much content coming out, and all the way until birth. And the postpartum, I write a lot. I really like writing when the baby's sleeping. It's just, I don't know, just opens some creativity in me. But every time in the first trimester, I was that meme that was flipping the table, you know, like, I'm done.
Right.
And this time I fully recognized how I don't feel that, because I'm not a business owner. Yes, it's been hard doing my day-to-day tasks as a CMO, but it is just a different level of mental load. I'm not as stressed, which played a huge, like, it made a huge difference.
Right, I can only imagine, because think about it. If you have a sore throat, it affects your mood.
Right,
like it's just like it's so basic and so simple, but then it impacts so many of your life that you don't even realize until, oh my god, I wish now I see how feeling normal and feeling okay, while doing your job, it's such a treat.
Absolutely. You know, I was talking to my sister, and I was like, man, it's hard to find joy sometimes, some days, because my lifestyle is absolutely different. I'm very active. I go on walks. I go on strolls. I work out. I see friends. Like, I just do lots of things because I have all this energy to do that, because I'm a healthy individual. I do it with kids. I play with kids. And the first trimester, you just do what you absolutely have to, which is, like, I can cook one dinner. I can feed myself. And I can work. That's about it. I can't pour extra into anybody, and I can't achieve the lifestyle that I like. And my sister's like, well, Katie, you've been sick for 2 months. Like, when you have a flu, all you can think, nothing matters. All you want is to get better.
Right.
So when you're feeling like this in the first trimester, nothing matters. All you want is to feel better. And that basically how I've been. And thankfully, I live in a city where my in-laws live. My husband is able to take some time off work and help me out. And I have a really good support system, delegation system. So I survived.
Right.
And I feel like I'm slowly coming back. But yeah, it would be very difficult if it wasn't this way.
Well, I'm glad it worked. The timing works out perfect.
Yeah, it really did.
And as a parent who remote works and you see this balance between being on Zoom call and being dedicated to your work. And I'm sure your husband have the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, how do you limit screen time, especially in front of your kids? Because you don't want them to look at you on the screen all the time. But then, is there a balance somewhere? What's the approach to handle this?
So it is easier for my husband. I mean, because I'm the mother. So if kids see me, they need me 100% of time. But they can look through the window into daddy's office and say, hi, daddy, and he responds, and that's it. That's the conversation. When I need to focus, I need to be behind the closed door, and they can't see me or hear me, because if they can just hear that I'm talking on the phone, they run through the door, they knock on the door, they need mommy 100%, which I understand. But again, I have grandparents in town. I have a great nanny helping me.
Right.
So yeah, support system helps. And we live in an absolutely beautiful neighborhood. We have this really cool library they always go to. There's some concerts, some museum 2 blocks away. So they're busy out and about. Even so, they're 3 and 1. There's a lot they can do in our neighborhood. So that's been wonderful.
That's definitely important to have your kids grow up in the community-based environment where they can get a lot of attention from different people and have their needs met while having the opportunity to go out and explore and get dirty in the dirt and play.
Yeah, I built out a really nice front yard so we can interact with all the neighborhood kids. We have like a sandbox, 2 swings, all kinds of teeter-totters and things like that.
Right.
But yeah, I still recognize that if I didn't have a job, there is a chance that I would spend more time with my kids. I just need to get to a point where I truly feel like it's a difficult thing, truly. I think it's taking me some time to recognize my value outside of workforce or business ownership. And for a long time, I couldn't imagine truly shutting down my business because I know it's valuable. I need to bring it to the world. I need to accelerate the sovereign individual thesis. And I also felt like it's important. And I started before kids. So there wasn't a path for me to fade away from that.
Yep.
Now that I have a job, I'm sure that as I have more kids, I will just have to say no to workforce for a while whatsoever. And just fully contribute my time and my efforts to motherhood. I also know that I will need some sort of outlet, which could be in the form of content creation, like podcasting, or writing a book on the whole investment migration thing. Like, I will need a professional outlet simply because I have this area of expertise and a passion that will burn in me if I don't exercise it.
Definitely.
Like, for example, when I quit professional career, like professional athletic career, it was still such a big part of my identity for a few more years, still is in some way, although I haven't competed in years.
Right.
Part of me still feels like I'm an athlete and I can go compete tomorrow and I can get to Olympics if I want to, but it's kind of ridiculous. I haven't competed in like 5 years now. So I feel like the same hole will burn with me quitting second passport kind of thing. So I will need to exercise it for a while I build out my stronger identity as a mother.
Right. And when you have to go through changes for your own identity because of how the life's dynamic change, do you find it a rather natural process where you really do have to kind of do shadow work and lean into it? Or
I'm never forced into that, I feel like.
Right.
It's always a very conscious transition. It's always a choice that I made previously. And just like I said, like, so far, I'm really proud of the choices that I made in life. My immigration to the U.S., meeting my husband, building our family, having my kids, building the business. Like, I'm really proud of past Katie, so I trust her more, and I know that this decision I've made previously got me to this beautiful life that I have today. So I'm just gonna keep doing what I'm doing, trusting my gut,
right.
Taking the steps when it feels like it's the right time. And sometimes I feel like, okay, like I feel some shame for not just being a stay-at-home mom. Once in a while, it hits me. Definitely. I think it's a very normal thing for most mothers. And then I have to recognize it and made myself understand that, okay, it may not have happened yet because it may not have been the right time. Right. I spend so much more time with my kids than just a working mother, 9-to-5 working mother. I have so much more energy than 9-to-5 working mother that is like her job.
Big time.
Because I live my passion. So I'm able to pour lots of love, time, and effort into my kids, thankfully, which makes me feel better about me not being a stay-at-home mom. But I just need to recognize that even if I do it 2 years from now, 3 years from now,
mm-hmm.
it's definitely not too late.
Right, for sure.
So it's the right at the right time. It will happen. I will take a sabbatical. I will take some time off. I will still exercise my passion in a form of second citizenship in some way or another, definitely, for a very long time, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I gained this absolute expertise in the topic. And I feel like just quitting the expertise, abandoning this part of me, just wouldn't feel right for me and would backfire elsewhere.
Right, right, totally. Because one of my own fear, I guess, one worry is that, like, this is you as a woman growing up, you're kind of anticipating that and you're trying to find a way out somehow, but it's not that easy because being a businesswoman, being a mom, being a wife, like all these things, they're very time and energy consuming, and it takes you to be all in and be focused in those roles and in these dynamics. And where do the Katie sits? And now, like, when you are ranking different area, like when you're doing your priority check, how do you keep your space?
The most important thing is I absolutely love everything I do in life. Because of that, I'm not losing my energy. Like, you know how we were talking about closing those holes that, like, 20% of tasks that you don't like take 80% of your energy? So minimizing those tasks in life. And overall, I don't have, like, in my overview of life, I don't have this energy outlet that's just taking my energy away, right? I have the job that I love. I absolutely love my family. I'm healthy. I'm energetic. I don't have any issues that, again, take my energy away. So that allowed me to, by this point, still combining me being the business owner first and now me being an employee and being a mother. So just need to make sure there's no suckers of energy in my life.
Wow, that's so spot on. Because if you're oftentimes when we're in an environment where we're doing things that don't suit us, and then we have something that we do want to do, then we have to use a certain amount of energy to counter the energy that's against us.
Yep.
And then use whatever's left to work on what we truly want to do.
Yep.
And if you just minimize or just eliminate the counter energy that you have to work on, the friction, minimize the friction, then it's smooth sailing. That's so important. But that requires someone to be extremely honest with themselves.
I'm in therapy.
Right. And you are. And you have totally adapted the Bitcoin ethos in your own life, doing what you do, doing what you love, and being consistent with it. Doing tons of proof of work. So there's tons of Bitcoin ethos shine through of how you approach your own life. And now you have kids, now you have family. Like, how do you find yourself actively try to teach Bitcoin ethos to your kids?
Not teaching per se of, like, educating them on what the principles are, but just leading by example, definitely. Like, they see how, like, our routine is so spot on. I never considered myself as I would be a schedule mom, and I'm not, but simply because we found the things that work for our family, that minimize friction and maximize joy mm-hmm. for our family, and we just stick with that. Like, our kids actually go to bed at the same exact time every night just because they're done at this time. Our routine of like family play looks exactly the same. And then funny enough, like we have this playroom for the family. So for the last hour and a half of the day, it's just me, kids and my husband just playing in this room together. And it's like a red light wall shining the red light on both of us. We're like playing with all the good toys that are kind of like educational, trying to read books, etc., and like truly focus on the family. And that's our routine that we found that works for us. They also see, they don't see us eating junk food. They don't even know junk food exists. Like one time I tried to give my three-year-old a gummy bear that is a vitamin. And he's like, what is this? It looks like a toy. It doesn't look like a food. Because he never had a gummy bear. And I was like, okay. He literally refused to eat it. And then there was another one that is covered in sugar. And he like touched it, put it away. And then I had to wash off the sugar so he eats it. Simply because he's not used to this kind of, like he doesn't have the taste buds for it. So they don't know that they're eating well. Mm-hmm. They just eat well because that's what they see.
Yeah,
we just found the things that work, and we really do stick with our routine almost to an extreme. And I don't fully recognize it sometimes because all of the friends in my circle are also Bitcoiners. So they're all like that. They're all highly disciplined, eating well, exercising.
Right.
But then once in a while you go outside of your bubble and you're like, oh, whoa, okay, that's different.
Yeah. Do you see any, now that it's been a while since you've become a mom, how does this process like made you understand more about yourself? Is there anything that's like now that you think back totally would have surprised the past Katie?
Not really. No, I don't think overall there's something that I'm inconsistent with my previous belief and imagination of me as a future mom.
Yeah,
both my husband and I wanted a family, wanted a big family. We met kind of young-ish. I was 25, he was 27, and we started a family the next year. Now we're about to have baby number three, and that's like the lifestyle we live now is kind of exactly what we envisioned for ourselves. We were very aligned in our values and principles and how we see the future, and that's why it worked out so quickly and so well. So overall, I don't necessarily see the mismatch.
Mm-hmm.
I probably did imagine being fully stay-at-home mom by now, which I'm not. But again, the time will come and the decisions will be made, but not there yet.
Right. And how do you identify some change in your marriage, in your relationship, after the dynamic shift from being a couple and being a family with kids?
So I was thinking our transition from 0 to 1, we barely noticed. I don't know why. I think we both had like so much unused energy that we didn't know what to do with. And it's like, oh, now there's a baby. Cool. And like, it was really easy. From 1 to 2, the transition was easy because I knew everything. Like, I knew how to be a mom this time. I knew the tricks. I truly believe I was like, second time, mom is a superpower. Mm-hmm. But then once we started having 2 toddlers, that's when things changed. Because now we're like, it's hard for me to load 2 kids in the car and go shopping because it's so many of them and they like everywhere. And sometimes we're like, Mike, help me out. Like, help me load kids in the car. So yeah, a lot more reliance on each other now that we have 2 toddlers. And I'm sure it's just gonna go even deeper and even bigger once we have 3 kids and hopefully more. We'll see.
Does the definition of legacy change for you over time with more perspective being a mom and have adopting more of a low time preference? Because now you're really in once. I definitely feel like once you have kids, your entire time preference shifts entirely, regardless if you're a Bitcoiner. Just because kids take decades of time to grow up, and by the time you always have to. You're envisioning that day, right? As naturally as a parent, does it change your view on time, on legacy?
So it changed my time, my risk tolerance, truly. I'm way less risk tolerant now. And like, thankfully, Bitcoin is not a risk for me. Like, this is not a risky investment whatsoever. So that doesn't come with Bitcoin exposure or anything, but more of like hedging against a jurisdiction. It's like a necessity because it's not that you're going to grab a backpack and a gun and run in the woods and hide from the state. Because now you have two little ones attached to you that can't run around with a gun, you know, and hide from the state. So this kind of thing is changing. The legacy, feeling of legacy is just strengthening because now you like, I have so much more connection to my parents and my in-laws now because I realize, we are their kids and now we have our kids and their parents are a huge connection to us too. So like this whole generational perspective starts playing a different role once you have the kids. And like, for example, I now constantly think about all the questions I didn't ask my grandma that while she was around, and I'm sad that I didn't. That also shows in my work, like when we start claiming lineage, like European lineage, we do genealogical research for my clients and we find all these little details about their family that they didn't know.
Right.
And they're like fascinated because now we show them, oh, your grandpa got electroshock as he was changing the wires in the streets of New York and that got him in the hospital and that's how he met grandma. And they're like, whoa, this is cool details we didn't know. I really like to go into those genealogical research for my clients, but it also means that I'm really curious about what happened in previous generations for me because I'm now also imagining how my action will change the future of my kids and their kids. So that's fascinating.
Do you sense mental resistance or do you feel like you're giving up on something that you love to do something else, or it's a natural choice that you want this more, hence you would?
Yeah, so my decisions of not doing things are always very conscious. But then once I get pregnant and I realize, oh, next 9 months I can't do so many things, I'm like, why didn't I do it when I wasn't pregnant? Like, I constantly think, why didn't I wakeboard every Saturday? Like, I could have done that every Saturday. And now that I'm pregnant, I really want to do it. And same goes for my snowboarding. Like, I really like snowboarding. So I've missed so many seasons because I'm like every second winter I'm pregnant. And every first winter I have a newborn. So it's like, doesn't work out. So I already told my husband that like, yeah, we're having this baby in January, but the next season we're spending so much time in Colorado, we're snowboarding every day. He's like, sure, Katie, sure. Yeah, so sometimes you just have to recognize that, okay, it's low time preference. It's not going to happen tomorrow, but the next season is there.
That's a good mindset too, because you were saying, oh, I could have done that when I'm not pregnant.
Yeah.
And then if you know at some point you're going to get restricted physically for a while, then do it now. Like, that's even more reason to go live your life now and try all these things so that you've done it. Because sometimes you don't need to stick to it. You just need to have tried it and know what it's like, and that's it.
Honestly, that's what it is in most of the cases for me. Because there are obviously hobbies that I love to do and things that I like to do constantly. And most of them I can still do, like play music or something. But yeah, sometimes it's like, go wakeboard with friends, like set it up, organize it. Kids will be on a boat too. It's not that hard.
Right. What do you think are some of the things that parents should be mindful of if they want to raise sovereign kids?
My biggest tip to parents who are yet to become parents, it's just get your good habits in order. Because once you have other things to do, you will compromise on your life choices, maybe like, oh, I'm going to just order takeout or I'm going to skip my workout. Yeah. And you will do these things naturally. But if you have a solid baseline of just like, no, that's a habit. I work out and I eat clean. Even though you deviate from those perfect habits here and there, that's not going to affect your life much. But just having a good baseline, and specifically health, is the biggest one. Simply because if you're in good health, you'll have more energy and being a parent will be easier.
Yeah, yeah. And if you have good health, and the baby is likely to be healthier and stronger and all that jazz, right? And I guess it come back to everybody, Bitcoiner or not, we really need to work on ourselves before we try to fix a world or try to bring a baby into the world. It's the same. Like, it really starts with ourselves and setting good routines and healthy body, healthy mindset, being honest with ourselves of who we are and what we want, and actually go after these things.
Just like in Bitcoin network, if you run the true Bitcoin node, you connect with the network that runs the same code. That's how you achieve the network effect of a strong network. So same goes for like anarchy or like a healthy community. You become a true node that is running the right code yourself, mm-hmm. and then you connect to individuals that are running the same code. Right. And once in a while, you run into a malicious node and you need to disconnect, and that's just how the network grows. Right. So, yeah.
Do you, now with more time managing both your family and your third pregnancy and the business, what have you give yourself permission not to do? Is there anything that are you consciously, because it seems like when you're looking for a partner, when you're looking for acquisition, you were actively trying to let go of certain aspects that either no longer serve you or you'd rather use your time better somewhere else, right? It seems like it has been an active process for you to let go of the things that no longer serve you. And what do you think, is there a recent example that you had to let go of something where you're giving yourself permission not to do something?
Well, not being the business owner, or just not managing the payroll and not managing the inflow, outflow of capital.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the biggest thing. Like, you know how many people rely on you every month and you have to keep the capital coming in. Otherwise, you have nothing to pay to your employees. That's just huge stress. So not being involved in that is already a lot. I also doubled the amount of cleaning help we get around the house. I also have this Russian family deliver two dinners for us every week. Yes. So all these little things. Yeah.
That's interesting, because there's the element of allow yourself to get help.
I don't have a problem with that.
Oh, okay. That's good. Because sometimes I know a lot of people, either they're a woman, they're a man, like, it doesn't matter, because people have this personality where there's the meme, they're like carrying this couch and having the other leg on this wheelchair and just push it across the street. They're people who are really, even they would feel shame when they ask for help somewhere. So I think that would be a huge part. But at the same time, like you said, you don't have to manage payroll and these people don't actively rely on you for their livelihood. That sounds to me is letting go of responsibility in a way. So how do you, and as Bitcoiners, we say, and the whole school of like Carl Jung and Jordan Peterson is like, your life's meaning come from responsibilities. And then we as individuals can achieve our meanings kind of by the pursuit of fulfilling responsibilities for ourselves and other people. And then there's a reverse process of there are times we have too much responsibilities and then we need to let go of some. Yeah. So that was an interesting.
And like the other side of responsibility is like your value, right? You feel like, oh, the more responsibility I have, the more value I have. And that's why I see lots of women not willing to ask for help around the house because, well, I'm the wife, I must clean. And I know that's not why my husband married me. I know that's not where my value comes into play for him, for our family, for our kids. He doesn't recognize that as my value, and neither do I. Mm-hmm. So I have no problems asking for help there.
Right.
Now the question is, do I still work because I don't feel like me being a mother is enough for my value?
Right.
To bring enough value. I know that my husband believes that would be more than enough for our family, but for some reason I still do. So that's like a question I navigate. Maybe it's because I truly love and passionate about my topic, my expertise, and I want to exercise it. Maybe it's because I know that people find me valuable for my expertise and I want somebody else outside of my family to find me valuable or things like this. I don't know.
Well, it's a natural thing to do. Like, you're really good at it, and we just naturally want to do the things we're good at. And that makes us feel good, right?
It,
it's just really a natural
does.
Thing.
It really does. But yeah, I have zero shame asking for help in the household.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure. And my husband is the same way. Something breaks in the house.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't want to waste my time on that.
Yeah.
Call the guy.
Yeah.
That's it. So he doesn't see his value coming from fixing things around the house. Neither do I find his value in that. Mm-hmm. I find him valuable for being my husband, a father of my children, and other things he does for our family, which is a lot, a lot. He takes on so much responsibility, I would be drowning. And he feels the same about my responsibilities
right.
as a mother, of course.
Yeah.
But that's where this the roles coming into play, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I don't have problems asking for help around the house. Zero.
That's great. And how about letting go responsibility? Because oftentimes we, like, career-driven people oftentimes view it as a linear process. Always more. More opportunity, more money, more significance.
Yeah.
More responsibilities, essentially. So how do you... And you've been a long time athletic, and that's... The whole competitiveness
it's insane.
In there, right?
Built into me. Yeah, for sure. That's a big transition for me to not be a professional athlete because I have to compete in everything else first. And then it takes me good 8 years to like, oh, wait, I don't have to compete at everything. Yeah, that's a funny personality trait that athletic kids learn.
How was the transition like from... I have to win, competitive, always winning, always wanting to win, to, oh, I don't really have to.
Well, I just, funny enough, when I was like 22, just learning the language, just immigrating to the US, I was putting two goals for my career.
Right.
I was like, I want to build a company and get acquired, and I want to be a CMO of a tech company. Well, through this acquisition, I got these two wins. I built a company that I got, and I got acquired, and now I'm a CMO of tech company because CitizenX is truly the citizenship platform, privacy focused and everything. And they're truly a tech company. While we are still a firm that helps people obtain second citizenship, we are a tech company too. So I just needed to recognize these two huge wins. And I felt really good about it, and I still feel really good about it. And I feel really in the right place. Like, every day I'm just more and more sure that that was
wow.
the right step for all of us.
Yeah.
It was a good deal for all of us. And, yeah, I get more responsibility out of other things, such as
right.
another human growing in my belly.
Wow. Because for those who don't yet familiar with Katie's backstory, check our last conversation on Life with Bitcoin, where we really delve into some of these aspects. And it seems to me that in this past 10-ish years, you've exercised so much strength and courage and really, truly exercised the Bitcoin ethos to an extreme almost. And requires like extreme discipline, extreme clarity. Like, have you always had this clarity growing up? And
I was really blessed with my childhood. Truly, now as a parent, I recognize even more so how blessed I was with my childhood. Had awesome parents growing up. Had awesome lifestyle in terms of being exposed to all kinds of things. Like, they really wanted us to learn all the skills, being curious about world. We competed all kinds of different things, which is we didn't necessarily win at everything, but we truly learned new things through
mm-hmm.
that. Just to give you a couple of examples, like, I obviously competed at sailing professionally, competed at snowboarding, competed at ping pong, because my mom is really good at it, and she still competes. She's 60 years old. She competes on a city level. Then she would take us on this car rallies, which are not necessarily the who gets the fastest in a car, but
mm-hmm.
more like a treasure hunt. So you get this map, and you have to calculate the equation to to get the coordinates of the next next place, next location. You drive there, you find some codes around the building, yeah. And it's like my mom would always get us involved in these things. So I just had this very curious childhood with all those beautiful things, and I was a very happy child. And she would teach me to exercise my ambitions anytime I could.
Is there a limit? Because my thinking here is that
immigrant parents pushing us every
right, like as parents, you want to protect your kids, but you want to have them explore.
Yeah.
So how do you?
Well, there's a chance my mom took it a little too far. No, truly, she really wanted me to live up to my potential. And we're talking about the mother that grew up in a communism where you couldn't exercise your ambition. That was literally the opposite of what you do in a communism society. So once she became an entrepreneur, she realized that, wait a second, if I exercise my ambitions, I benefit from it now that we are in a post-communist country. So she made sure that we exercise our ambitions to the best of our ability. And maybe that's why I was like on this crazy timeline of like, oh, let's just move to another country, learn the language, build a business, sell the business, have 3 kids and all that in 9 years.
Right. Do you see a fine line somewhere between protecting them and encouraging them to explore somewhere?
Gut feeling.
It's a gut feeling?
Truly, truly just a gut feeling. And for me, for my kids, it's also very different because my oldest has a disability. So for him, it's me constantly thinking, oh, he's uncomfortable. I really need to help him. And at the same time, encourage him and motivate right. him to get out of this disability and get over it and fight for full life. So that's been difficult to navigate. With my little one, it's much easier because mm-hmm. he's just extremely active and curious and extroverted. So for him, currently, there's no stops. I don't need mm-hmm. to stop this child. And my childhood teacher, my parents were like, oh, Katie's like ridiculously disciplined at home. Like if she makes a mistake in her homework, she redoes the entire thing. Like she rewrites the entire essay. And my teacher was like, she'll get there. Don't try to stop that. Like the age will correct that and she will let go of things.
So you were like that as a kid.
Apparently, yeah.
Right, right. Do you think that's nature or nurtured?
I wouldn't call my parents disciplined. So
right.
maybe part of it is nature. Like when I was 6, I decided that I want 6-pack. And I had this HVC, whatever, cassette.
Yeah.
With Cindy Crawford doing exercises. And I was doing an hour a day all summer until I got my 6-pack. So it's like there are weird things in my childhood that I'm like, can't fully comprehend why I was like that. Wow. But yeah, there were signs, I guess.
Wow. Then if it sounds like you're like a true perfectionism and a true professionalist. I really want to go for the extra mile and want to not necessarily win, but just to make yourself feel like you've done your best. So how was the process like to let go?
That's funny because I never considered myself a perfectionist. Like, for example, if there is mess at my house, don't care whatsoever.
Right.
Like
right.
spill something on the floor in the kitchen, I'll walk around this puddle for days. Don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
So like some things I'm zero perfectionist.
Right.
But I do like the challenge. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's the thing. Like I do like the challenge. I do enjoy getting over hard things and like proving that I can.
And I bet that's a learned process because it's like you have to be able to have fun from overcoming challenges.
Yeah, I definitely do, for sure.
Because most people would be like, oh, that's challenging. Oh, that's difficult. I will be uncomfortable. That's the feedback loop.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And for you, it's a different loop.
Yeah.
How do you think, for those of whom who don't have the level of clarity you have, who don't yet have the clarity that you have, and want to work towards a more focused life, more healthy life for themselves and be more honest with themselves about who they are and who they want to become and start walking towards that, what are some of the things you can tell them that they could start doing right away? I think one, go for it.
I mean, finding the things that are that make sense for me. Like, Bitcoin makes so much sense for me. It's like a base level thing. And I recently realized that, like, I learned the language through Bitcoin. I got into adulthood not knowing things, how the world works, etc. And then I discovered Bitcoin. And I learned the entire country's culture, the entire language, the entire aspects of life, like economics, politics. I learned it all through the prism of the orange internet money. So I applied Bitcoin structure to everything else in my life, like me explaining things through nodes.
Yeah.
That's a constant thing. I use Bitcoin as a metaphor for non-technical things all the time. I use Bitcoin as a metaphor for explaining like emotions even sometimes, or mental health or things like that. Just because it makes so much sense to me. There's the structure that is perfectly built, and I applied it everywhere.
Right.
So just finding things that make sense. Like, for some people, it's religion. Religion gives people lots of clarity, and it gives you the rules on based on which you just build your entire life. Mm-hmm. But for other people, it's exercise. It's schedule. It's discipline.
Right.
So just find something that truly makes sense for you, and you're like, whoa, yes, that is it. This is the base of my life. Yeah. This is the set of values I'm going to apply for everything in my life, and it starts showing up everywhere.
Wow, it's really about aligning your body and mind and heart, to listen to these tiny little intuitive voices. To do things that feel a little bit easier for you, but maybe not for other people.
Yeah. Yeah. The set of values and principles, once you have that, you don't necessarily need to come back to it and re-question it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just starts giving you gut answers.
And what you told me last time, when we had the last conversation, what you said really stuck with me is that you were visualizing fully. And ever since, it seems like even from the very beginning that you came to the U.S., you're like, oh, these are the two things I'm going to do. You were very clear. That clarity is so impressive and so constant. Because over the years, have you doubted yourself? Is it something that you wished for it and then you forgot about it? Or it's something that you wished for it and then you were like actively every single day kind of working towards that?
Definitely a lot of it was still subconscious. Like, the goals that I set, I know for a fact they're written in my Trello board somewhere. Like, I probably have access to this Trello board still, or in some of my diaries. Because, I'm usually very intentional in setting goals, but I'm not as intentional as, like, okay, there's this big goal, there are this 2,000 steps. No, usually, like, I know the direction, and I know that I will deviate from my imaginary path because, like, I work for other tech companies before that I thought, okay, that here's my path to CMO, and that clearly didn't work out, and like, right. I thought I would be working in different industries that I do now, maybe, but like, I deviate from the original path that I envisioned and imagined, but it's still the right direction. And then a lot of it's subconscious, just trying your best, and guess what, somehow I ended up there.
And were you like active in setting goals but not attached to the result, or you are actively setting goals attached to the result but you are not attached when it comes to timeline or approach? Like, do you feel like you have to do this or it's gonna happen, or it's a goal I'm gonna try and then whatever happens happens? Like, which one?
Yeah, whatever happens happens. Specifically now, because so I felt like I was in the right place. Running my business felt right. Starting a family felt right. And I didn't necessarily, I wasn't sure that I was going to get acquired at some point at all.
Yeah.
It's actually a very rare occasion in our industry. Like, there's like two acquisitions in history of our industry, and like one merger, maybe a couple mergers, which I'm not fully aware of. So it's not that I thought that Plan B Passport would get acquired. But I felt right where I was. I really loved my job. So I just focused on that and focused on doing my best where I was and where it felt right. And then somehow it got to the end of my visualization that I set like 9 years ago, which is crazy. When the moment I realized that, I was like, whoa, that's pretty insane.
Wow.
So definitely a lot of it, like, I wanted it. I knew that I had the right skills and characteristics to get there. So maybe the goals partially came from what I know about myself and what made sense for me. And then, I got there.
And it seems like it was the same thing with your relationship, because last time we were talking about finding a husband and you were telling me how you were like making a list of every single thing you want this person to have, the traits, and then, so that you meet this person and then you're very clear that this is who you're looking for. And that gave me like, that makes sense to me. That made sense to me. So I think you're definitely a super master of manifestation and visualization and creating, bringing things into reality with your willpower, with your proof of work and the consistency. And for today's Katie, if this is just a beginning, where are you heading towards?
Probably going to, so I'm going to work with Citizen X as a CMO for a year or two, or maybe a few more. I am going to transition then more towards just creating the content, not doing necessarily sales, just maybe transition to part-time. I'm hoping to have more kids. It's not like having kids is easy. Birthing kids and raising kids are easier for me than to be pregnant, honestly. I don't know. This pregnancy was really, wow. This last 8 weeks just made me realize how not easy it was. And that's just not physically not easy. It's just my whole life kind of breaks. My whole routine breaks for this 8 weeks. So we'll see how that goes. We did not set the number of kids that we want. We're just taking it one at a time. I'm honestly hoping 4, 6. I don't know.
Wow.
So I hope I'll keep going. I think I will open a center for specific type of physical therapy for kids with disability. Where it's not going to be my job. I will kind of launch and manage it, but just feel like there's a gap that needs to be filled for my child.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are other children, because when you solve a problem for yourself, there are others. That could happen. But I also see us traveling the world with kids quite a bit, taking a solid sabbatical, not just me becoming a stay-at-home mom, but my husband taking some time off work for a year or two. Also hoping to have my parents around more often,
right.
Like actually living in the same city for at least 6 months a year. That would be awesome. I mm-hmm. want my kids to know my parents more than just meeting them, you know, every couple of years.
Wow. Lots in the process.
Yeah. And we'll play by ear, but my husband and I are pretty aligned on like how we see the next 10 years of our life. But there's absolutely no set plans. Like, we're going on vacation in a couple months. And even that vacation, we were like, okay, this country, no, here. It was completely different parts of the world where we were going and completely different months of the year.
Right.
It's not that we're like, oh, next year we're going there.
Yeah.
No, it's like last minute we pull a trigger on something, and because we have the flexibility.
Right. Well, it's not like you're afraid of being deviated from
from
your past. And oftentimes this is where we find the view and the new perspectives that we thought we would never acquire. Another very impressive conversation. I'm so glad to see you in person and hearing all these great news that are happening in your life and exciting updates and heading into new life chapters. Definitely love the work you do in Bitcoin. I think I first saw you in 2022 in Miami. We didn't even know each other back then, but mm-hmm. I had this very strong impression of you even from back then. And then I'm glad the circumstances have brought us together to have this very conversation and for me to have another opportunity to learn from you and how you've lived your life with Bitcoin. It's definitely giving me a lot of extra courage and strength to heading into new life chapters and continuing on with the life with Bitcoin. And it seems like yourself, your clients, and your family, they're enjoying Katie in full spectrum.
Thank you so much, really appreciate it. It's been awesome. Yeah, not often I get to talk about all this other things outside of my professional career. So that's definitely a breath of fresh air for podcasting for me.
Well, it's a Live with Bigquay. So
a lot about life. Yeah.
It's about life. And oftentimes even Bitcoiners seem to forget that it's Bitcoin is the tool and ultimately family, love, freedom. These are the things that we all long for as individuals, regardless of where we are and who we are. And Bitcoin is the key for us to unlock more freedom, more happiness. But it shouldn't be. It's a means to an end and it's not the end.
Absolutely.
100%. Yes. So thank you so much, Katie, for yet another great conversation on Live with Bitcoin. We would love to have you back anytime.
Yeah, update in 2 years.
Amazing, amazing. Let's do it. Thank you very much for tuning into another episode of Live with Bitcoin. This is Vivian and we'll see you in the next one.